Blog Talk Radio.
Interesting birthdays today. Elizabeth I, probably the greatest English queen, she fought off the Spanish Armada. They called her the Virgin Queen, although there were some questions about that. And, of course, she was the bastard daughter of Anne Boleyn and Henry VIII. And she was the subject of the gunpowder plot. Guy Fawkes tried to blow up Parliament, and during her reign, the British intelligence service of Francis Walsingham started it. They didn't call it that, but they needed to protect themselves from the Catholics, you know, who were Philip II of Spain, and who were trying to crush England and return the country to Roman Catholicism. And probably the later the Stuarts. Anyway, she had one of the longest reigns. She was born in 1533. She became queen. She was going to be beheaded by her older sister, Mary, who was called Bloody Mary, who was the daughter of Philip II and Henry VIII. One of the Henrys was her. Henry VIII was Mary's father. And anyway, she died in 1603, and that was the end of the Tudors, who had ruled England for about 100 years after the battle at Tewkesbury, when Richard III lost his head in that famous line, "My horse, my horse, my kingdom for a horse." And the Stuarts came in, James I and James II, and then the Charleses. Also today, in 1908, a famous heart surgeon works in Texas. Dr. Michael DeBakey was born today. Great movie director, Elia Kazan, Streetcar Named Desire, that made Marlon Brando famous. Then we had Anthony Quayle, great actor. I don't know if he was ever knighted. An unusual voice, and he was in quite a few films, and among his most famous films was Lawrence of Arabia. Then getting back to Elizabeth, Anne of a Thousand Days, that was Anne Boleyn, the mother of Elizabeth I. And then we had James Van Allen, who discovered the Van Allen radiation belt. And then we had Peter Lawford, another Englishman, born in 1923, who married into the Kennedys. They didn't kind of accept him because I guess he didn't have enough class. One of the Kennedy daughters married Lord Cavendish, and this has a San Francisco connection because Lord Cavendish in World War II was the grandson of the assassinated, his grandfather was assassinated by Terence Hallinan's grandfather. Patrick Hallinan was part of the IRA, or not the IRA, but it was would be considered a terrorist organization today, although they consider themselves fighting for Irish freedom. He was assassinated. The Prime Minister Gladstone had sent Cavendish to Ireland, Northern Ireland, I guess. He was assassinated in the park, and that set back the negotiations or the desires to find some kind of a peaceful settlement between the Irish and the English. And of course, when Elizabeth was queen, she did send in one of her, I guess you could call him his lover, to suppress the Irish because they were constantly trying to get their freedom because of the act of a Roman Catholic Pope, Adrian, who gave Ireland to the English and to England, and it wasn't his to give. He was meddling in politics. This is something that's the Catholic Church has always been had a problem with. And incidentally, today in the 16th century, a Jesuit priest, 1582, excuse me, Father Matteo Ricci, he landed in China, mainland China, and started the first Catholic mission. And this created a lot of problems with the Chinese, who were Confucian, Buddhists, and all those other various religions in the that were practiced in the different parts of China. But Peter Lawford was in the movie The Longest Day, and he was part of the Rat Pack, as those of you remember, Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin and that crowd, Sammy Davis Jr., used to run around Hollywood. Also today is the birthday in 1924 of U.S. Senator Daniel Inouye, who was born in Hawaii, American citizen. He was very upset about that internment of the Japanese after Pearl Harbor. Interestingly, in Hawaii, they didn't intern any Japanese, and the Hawaiians were very dominant. Part of the population was the Japanese who were sensei, or Japanese who were native-born, Japanese heritage, I prefer to call these people, because I don't use ethnic hyper-nation. Anyway, it's his birthday today, and he was a hero with the most famous and most decorated Army unit, the 442nd, and we're going to play a little excerpt from his an interview done with him, which we had in the archives. Here goes.
Consider the fact that I'm 18, so your emotions are that of a young person.
I was angered to realize that my government felt that I was disloyal.
And part of the enemy. And I wanted to be able to demonstrate, not only to my government, but to my neighbors, that I was a good American.
After Pearl Harbor, Washington had ordered some 110,000 Japanese aliens and American citizens of Japanese descent living along the West Coast, out of their homes and into 10 internment camps. All Japanese American men of draft age, except those already in the armed forces, had been classified as enemy aliens, forbidden to serve their country. Then, in early 1943, Washington announced a new policy. Japanese American men were now going to be permitted to form a special segregated outfit, the 442nd Regimental Combat Team. When the Army called for 1,500 volunteers from Hawaii, where Japanese Americans had never been locked up, 10,000 turned up at recruiting offices, including a freshman in pre-medical studies at the University of Hawaii, Daniel Inouye.
And my father took time off, and we got on the streetcar, and he was very silent. until we got close to the point of departure. He cleared his throat, and I knew something was coming. He's not a scholarly person, but I know he struggled. And he said, this country has been good to us. It has given me two jobs. It has given you and your brothers and your sister education. We owe a lot to this country. Do not dishonor this country. Above all, do not dishonor the family. And if you must die, die in honor. You know, I'm 18 years old, and here he is telling me these heavy words. And I've always thought to myself, would I be able to say the same thing to my son?
I think that they may not really have known it themselves, but I think this feeling was instilled in them through all of our parents. It's called Yamato Damashi, and it's just, it's like a proving of yourself, and that your loyalty goes beyond just saying it or talking it, you know, it's proving it, giving it your all, even if you die in the process by going to war. And I think that's so strongly instilled from when you're very young, that I think that that was one of the things that pushed them on.
And that was
consider the fact.
Saluting Senator Inouye. He's in his 80s. It's time to retire. And been a good senator from Hawaii. But, you know, there is a time for everybody to leave the stage and leave their. They will be honored for the work that they did. Among the other birthdays today, we have John Philip Law. If you remember Barbarella and Jane Fonda, she should have stuck to acting. I think he played the angel. His birthday is today. And then this is a connection to KALW, which is celebrating its 70th anniversary this year, although they seem to have forgotten about people like Jack Phillips. You can go to our YouTube site, and he's the latest interview, about 26 minutes that we did, and he has a gorgeous leonine mane. And then we also did the interviews, which are up on the our Blog Talk archives. And probably he's the most famous among the broadcasting industry, Cosmo Nascenti, teacher of many of the broadcasting students, technicians, who've gone to work all over the country. But he's recognized that there have been a lot of changes in the industry and the big salaries that these guys used to get. And the demand for them, because there were fewer of them, the whole industry has changed, like the law profession has changed. And we'll get into that another day. I feel dear to my heart since I spent nearly 40 years in various aspects of it. So Garrison Keeler was a Prairie Home Companion. Minnesota Public Radio brought it in from, started it, because that's where it came, originated, and Ted Samuel. The late Ted Samuel, great program director at KALW-FM, brought me in. He brought this program in, and it's Garrison Keeler's birthday today. He was born in 1942. And then among the deaths today, Geoffrey Plantagenet, 1151. This was after the 1066, when the Normans invaded England and defeated Harold at the Battle of Hastings, and then this was starting the Plantagenet clan. And then one of them, Geoffrey, one of the sons, went to conquer Normandy, and that later, I think it was Henry II, Lion in Winter, see that film with Peter O'Toole and Katharine Hepburn, talking about Eleanor of Aquitaine. She was the wealthiest woman and owned most of the land in that part of Europe during that period of European history. Among the events today, and this is of interest, in 1822, Brazil declared its independence from Portugal. Now, Brazil came into existence. There was a fight between Spain and Portugal over carving up South America. So the Pope drew a line of demarcation across South America. This is the Pope meddling again. And Portugal got Brazil, which they speak Portuguese to this day. It's one of the hardest languages. And so in 1822, Brazil declared its independence. They were also one of the last countries in the world to abolish slavery. And even today, as I was told, we have the great samba music, which has its roots in African rhythm and melody and song. Also, you'll see the complexion of many of the Brazilians, and part of their heritage comes from Africa. And then, of course, you have the Germans and you have the Blue Eyes, but it's certainly what, interestingly, what California's going to look like within the next 10, 15 years. A very multi-ethnic population, which has various racial hues of color, which would be a good thing. I like pedigrees and horses and dogs and mixes and human beings. Also today, 1892, a famous boxing match, one of the most famous in the world, James Corbett, who was white, knocked out John L. Sullivan and took him 21 rounds to do it. And then jumping 100 years forward, no, not quite 100 years, but nearly 40-something, the Morro Castle was a luxury liner which caught fire off of New Jersey, and over 134 people were killed. It's one of the most famous or infamous maritime disasters, and that close to shore. This is relevant to what's going on today, and Obama has a point about infrastructure, although his way and his advisor's ways of dealing with it highly controversial and questionable, seeing that the stimulus did not work. In 1936, a part of the Works Program Administration, in a program of the Franklin Delano Roosevelt administration to get people back to work, Boulder Dam was a public project, and it started operating in 1936 on this date, September 7th. And it's still working today. It's one of the great engineering marvels here in the United States. In 1940, on this date, because Hitler went nuts on the accidental bombing of Berlin by the RAF, their sights were off or something. And so London was not, during the Battle of Britain, London was not bombed. But then Hitler went nuts, and they decided to try to bomb the populace into submission and suing for peace. And this was the first night of that there were 56 consecutive nights of bombing by the Luftwaffe, but they couldn't break the British spirit. And then in 1981, this is part of the problem of, are we over-lawyered? Judge Wapner started his People's Court program on TV, and we see all these lawyers on these various programs pontificating, but nobody describes what their background was, what their batting average, were they, how many cases they won, lost, or appealed. And there's this myth that prosecutors are infallible and they know everything, and nobody looks into their background. And I think people are getting tired of these lawyers flapping their jaws. They never quote the specific law. They just say the law is. How many times have you heard that? But we're seeing a segment of American society that is getting, there are too many lawyers. We're seeing that they're not talking about it as much as they should. The New York Times ran an article, a couple of series, as a matter of fact, on the legal profession, where the profits are way down in the law firms. Of course, they charge you so much for billable hours. Also, the law schools, the graduates come out and they're saddled with $200,000 worth of debt. There are no jobs. They're overqualified to flip hamburgers at McDonald's or Burger King, and there are no law firm jobs, and government is saturated with lawyers. Most of the corruption in the United States, if you look at the background of the people involved, involve lawyers or lawyers connected to the legal profession, or, you know, it's a profession that's looked at as lower. A whore has more respectability than a lot of these lawyers. But a lot of the corruption, whether it's John Edwards, whether it's Terrence Hallinan here, Fraga, a big case in San Diego, which involved judges, 48 lawyers and judges in Cook County have been convicted of public corruption. It goes on and on. A big law firm, Milburn Weiss, was involved in a lot of corruption and scandals and brought that one down. I think one of the federal court cases, the fine against the law firm was, I think, $500 million. So, and of course, the guy that ripped off so many people is now in prison. They had to be the lawyers and accountants that helped him. It's interesting, in the Watergate trials, all the lawyers went to prison. John Dean on down, the U.S. Attorney General, John Mitchell. But the accountant, Maurice Stans, the Secretary of Commerce, he walked. So it just goes to show you that lawyers aren't invulnerable, as some of them think they are. They don't know everything that they would have you think they do. And also there's this arrogance. We had a case here in San Francisco of a woman driving an expensive car. The cops stopped her. She was drunk, and she said to the cop, "I'm a lawyer. You can't touch me." Well, they touched her. So this goes on all the time, and I have been in cases where I've witnessed, especially the Stephen Nery U.S. Navy case, a conviction based on fraud and intimidation and forged documents. John Farrell, the lawyer, the assistant prosecutor in the San Francisco District Attorney's Office, came into court and fabricated evidence on gay bathhouses that this kid, 17-year-old kid, was supposedly, he inferred, went to in gay bars in Palm Springs, California, in Cathedral City, and allowed open jury tampering and winked at the people tampering with the jury that was improperly, illegally impaneled. We'll get into that. We're getting the abbreviated ebook is almost finished, and it's called Stalked, Lured, Raped, and Railroaded, the case that's cost the American taxpayer $15 million to date. $10 million of that figure was to build an affordable housing project for AIDS victims, and already they've raised the rent 400%, just to show you what these bogus affordable housing, bogus nonprofits. That's also one of the misnomers that were part of the English language, nonprofit. It's really non-taxpaying. In fact, that's a group of in our economy that doesn't pay taxes, yet they have huge profits, and they hide it under such accounting names as development fees, consultant fees, and all of that. But the American taxpayer, you pay for it, and you will continue to pay for it, and you will never own what you paid for, what you taxed for, what you subsidize. So we're going to end with, we'll be back Friday, and we'll have more interviews. In fact, I have a lawyer lined up, and she'll be telling you how you can do your own case. But I warn you, here's the caveat. There's one case that you cannot prosecute yourself, and that is QUITAM, and we'll get into that. It's a source, it's a law started by President Lincoln because he was buying horses, and the government was being sold horses that weren't even fit for horse meat, that were lame. And, of course, during the American Civil War, people like General Custer were killing 5,000 horses a month. He was known as a horse killer because his tactics and antics with the cavalry was just outrageous in some cases. But in those wars also, whether it was Waterloo or the Crimean War, a lot of horses were slaughtered and badly injured that they had to be put down. But QUITAM started in the Lincoln administration to recover money that was that the contractors and people had ripped off from the federal government, whether it was through contracts selling horses or supplies or services, and it's still in effect today. It's a very interesting law, and it's very effective, and it's nobody's talking about using it to recover an estimated $1 billion that's been ripped off from the federal government. State government here in California also has a QUITAM type of law. We'll get into that another day. So we're going to end today with our usual thing, is what we usually talk about, and which a lot of politics ends up being, and that is politics and poker.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead.
I got too much on my mind to play poker. King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Hey,
Tony,
what are you
going to
do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Mike, why?
Me too. Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year. Big ace.
Ace bet.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where's the time?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Info.
Possible straight, possible flush. Nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's it going? We should make Jack Riley the guy.
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jack, bat out.
Politics and poker, shuffle up and cards and find the joker. Need a game for children, need a game is rough. Decisions like
who to pick,
how to play, not to bet,
when to call a bluff.
All right now, fellas, politics or poker, which is more important?
Parrot raise.
Bet 'em.
Little trade, good as gold.
I'll say.
Raise your five.
I'll call.
I'll hold.
I'll raise your back.
I think you're bluffing.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Okay, I'm in.
Gentlemen, knock it off and let's get this done.
Try, Michael Panjicinkovich. I'm certain he'd run.
Mike is out. I'm afraid he just wouldn't sell. Nobody likes a candidate whose name they can't spell.
How about Dave Zimmerman?
Davey's too bright.
What about Walt Gustafson?
Walt died last night.
How about Frank Monahan?
What about George Gale?
Frank ain't a citizen and George is in jail.
We could run out Wallenstein.
He's only 23.
What about Ed Peterson?
You idiot! That's me!
Politics and poker! Politics and poker! Play for a pot that's mediocre! Politics and poker! Running neck and neck! If politics seems more predictable, that's because usually you can stack the deck!
Friday with the best of the week, and we'll be getting into Jack Cashel's book, Deconstructing Obama. Everybody's asking the question, where's all these writings Mr. O is supposed to have in his biography, his background, and as editor of the probably the most prestigious of the law school publications, the Harvard Law Review, where the law review articles that some people think that he's written. So we'll get into that. Jack Cashel investigated it. He's an investigative author and journalist and editor. And he's also written several books, Popes and Bankers, which I recommend for every high school student if you understand an economy and that part of the economy. Also, What's the Matter with California? There's a hell of a lot wrong with this state. And than the Flight 800, the TWA flight, which he was unfairly lacerated as a conspirator. Anyway, it's Peter Paul Vizzola, and we will be back Friday. And this will be up in the archives, and I think it can be downloaded on your iPod. Good night.